I like the new back. Okay. All right. Welcome to Finance and Government Committee. It's our second meeting. We have four agenda items. Two of them are discussions, and the rest, the other two, are they're looking for directions from us to forward to 222, the Community of Whole. Let's start with the item 1A, community assistance, city utility payments. Vicky, is that you?
Yes, thank you very much. So as you know, since the pandemic began last March, the city has been waiving late payments and shutoffs on our utility customers. The last waiver that we had in place expired December 31st. So when discussing this with administration, rather than extending this and then having to continually extend it, we're recommending that we just make this consistent with any revised proclamations or the orders issued by the governor. So that way, when the emergency ends, then the discontinuance of no shutoffs and late fees would end as well. So we're asking that this City Council affirm the update to this to have the no shutoffs and no late fees in place until the emergency is over with.
Yeah, so thank you, Vicky. Kathy, Cynthia, do you have any questions, comments? Kathy, I'll go with you first.
So on the financial impact part, would you, Vicky, that's on page two, if you've got the agenda. Could you talk a little bit about that, and then I'll have a related question.
Sure. So we typically receive about $2,000 in late fee per month from late fees. So there is a small financial impact by waiving the late fees, but it is in the whole grand scheme of the water utility, it's about $20,000 to $24,000 a year. So it's not significant. Our late fees are pretty low when it comes to our utility invoices.
Okay. So is that, did they adjust for that in the budget this year?
We did.
Okay, good. Perfect. And then, do we have some ratepayers that are going to be like really in arrears and might be struggling to catch up at the end?
So we do have some utility customers that have called us up and, you know, concerned about not paying their bills. Whenever we receive those calls, we do connect them with human services. So we work very closely with that department on a regular basis and put them in touch. And we also recommend that if you can make a payment, if you can't pay the whole bill in total, that's fine. Just pay what you can. And again, we're not going to charge late fees or shut the water off until the emergency is over with this. And what we anticipate is when the emergency is finally over, we will be working with customers that have significant late balances to work out payment plans so that they won't have to pay the whole amount right away.
Yeah, maybe there'll be some other financial resources for that too, because since this is a pass-through resource for some of these utilities, like the water is, and so pass-through payment. Okay, those were my questions.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Cynthia?
I was just wondering who would decide, you changed the expiration date until further notice, but who would decide when the pandemic is over? Pandemic is over. Is it the governor? Is it the mayor? I'm just wondering, like, who makes the decision of when this policy ends?
At this point, we're recommending following the governor's recommendations. So as the governor updates their proclamation and declares the emergency over, then we would most likely do the same thing.
Okay. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, so thank you, Cynthia. I don't have any questions. I think it's a good idea to change that language to be consistent when the proclamation changes at the governor's office. So I think the direction this is asking is if we can forward to consent on 222. I heard both of you guys say okay. Is that correct? Okay, cool. All right, so we'll move on to second item, an ordinance related to appeals authority for animal control. I think that's you, Vicki, is that correct?
That is me as well. So just to give you a little bit of background, animal control services are currently provided by Regional Animal Control Services through King County. We've contracted with King County for a number of years for this particular service. The last contract went into effect January 1st, 2018 and expires December 31st, 2022. The contract does allow for an automatic extension for an additional 5 years unless one city decides to pull out, and then we'll have to go back and revisit the contract. So essentially, we're looking at this as a 10-year contract. One of the things that King County did is they did update their code to, instead of doing a Board of Appeals, to change any sort of appeal that develops from an animal control issue to use the King County Hearing Examiner. So this is truly just a housekeeping item to change our code to match the King County code to reference King County Hearing Examiner instead of the Board of Appeals.
Yep, straightforward. Thank you, Vicki. Cynthia, comments, questions?
No questions for me. It looks fine.
Okay, thank you. Kathy?
Nope, like a housekeeping issue to me, so thank you. I'm in favor.
Yeah. Right. Same here, I don't have any questions. I was kind of curious on if I can get a link on the interlocal agreement. Whenever you get a time, it'd be great.
We can provide that, of course.
Yep. And then, so this is also asking that we forward to February 26th Community of Whole. And there's a special meeting on the consent agenda. Is that okay with both of you guys? Okay, that's 3-0. Okay, so we'll go to the discussion items. 2020 fourth quarter investment report. I think that's you, Vicki. Take it away.
Yep, and I apologize. I have something stuck in my throat. Hopefully I can get through this. So this is the last report for 2020. Just kind of wrapping up our cash investment report. Just give you the highlights. So as of the end of December 31st, our portfolio totaled $70.3 million, comprised of $67 million in change of cash and cash equivalents, and $3.1 million in longer-term investments. As you know, we have been spending our cash. We had issued bond proceeds in previous years, and we've been spending that to build the Justice Center as well as the fire station. So we do have a lower balance, which was definitely planned for. And also because of the pandemic, we have been holding our cash more liquid rather than investing in longer-term investments. And as you see, when we get further along in this report, you'll see that our interest rates for longer-term investments, the ones we purchased several years ago, were in the 2 to 3% range. I've been watching longer-term investments now, and we would be lucky to get a 0.5% interest. So I think we're going to stay short-term for a little bit longer before we start investing in longer-term investments, because we don't want to lock into a very low interest rate when interest rates finally do start to creep up. So, you know, we definitely don't want to try and play the market, because you don't always win when you do that, but we do want to be cautious about not locking in funds for a long time for a very short-term investment. So at the bottom of page 11 of the packet shows our portfolio breakdown. You'll see our operating cash, just cash on hand, is $10 million. And our LGIP, which is the local government investment pool, about $41 million, money market account about $15 million, and then a couple of other minor investments for a total balance of $70 million. Page 2 of the memo recaps the investment activity. During 2020, we received about $583,000 in total interest earnings from both the LGIP and money market accounts. And just kind of a point of interest, 65% of that was earned during first quarter, prior to the onset of the pandemic and the Fed reducing the interest rates. And to just kind of put that in perspective, our fourth quarter investment earnings were about $28,500, so significantly lower. Our longer term investments that we currently hold, interest totaled about $37,000. And we did have $2.29 million in investments called or matured. So again, we don't have much in long-term investments at this point right now. Return on investments, our current portfolio yield at the end of the year was 0.45%. Washington State, LGIP, and the Columbia Bank Money Markets, which are the two better investments that we can hold and keep cash liquid, respective earnings rates was 0.16 and 0.26% respectively. So again, interest rates right now is very, very low. You can see on the bottom of page 2 of the info memo, page 12 of your packet, shows the 2-year treasury note rate. You can see it started to grow up to about, looks like 2.5%. Wow, that's really small. And then it just bottomed out with the pandemic. And we don't anticipate interest rates going up in the near future. Page 13 of the packet summarizes just the investments that we have on hand. And then page 15 shows that we're in compliance with our investment policy. And with that, I'll ask if there's any questions.
Okay, thank you, Vicky. Cynthia, do you have any questions, comment?
Can you remind me if this is built into the budget as revenue, like the interest that we earn?
Yes, it is. We do budget interest earnings, and we do try and be conservative with that, not knowing when the market is going to turn around.
All right. So this, would you say, because now we're looking at last year, this was budgeted into... I'm just trying to like figure out when the money was budgeted. This was budgeted into last year's budget. So
correct.
Like our interest earnings for this year were predicted already.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So just because we do a biennial budget, when we drafted the 2019-2020 budget, we would have estimated our interest earnings back in 2018. For 2019 and 2020. So when you adopted the budget for 21 and 22, we based our interest earnings off of what we knew at the market at that point from a few months ago.
Okay.
And hopefully we were conservative enough.
All right. Okay. That was my question.
All right. Thank you, Cynthia. Kathy?
I have no questions. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't have any questions, but I think the comment or the question that Cynthia asked, I triggered something that I think would be important for someone to looking at this, is to see if this could be a page included in, you know, what was predicted and where does this pertain in our budget. So you could look at if it was 19-20 budget, you know, so you have that in front of you. If it's not too much work for you, that's just a suggestion I would make. Is that something?
Sure. That is a great suggestion. And with our new ERP system, it will be very easy for us to pull more informative reports to show that budget to actual comparison. And so we can definitely start incorporating that in future reports.
Okay. Go ahead, Kathy.
So are you saying to also include the impact that the variation in interest income has on the budget? I'm not sure. I might just be thinking that's what you want, because was that what you were asking for?
You know, I think the question was if the interest that's gained is reflected as revenues in our budget, and the answer was yes. And I just followed up on that saying, hey, where is that in our budget? Well, we were conservative when we're predicting it, but now that, you know, like it's last year's budget, how did what we said and how did we come up? So budget to actual. And Vicky's comment was we can do that if we have, you know, the new software.
Okay. I was thinking along that lines. I think that's really good. Would you do that with a chart or with just a narrative, just a standard paragraph that you would put in? Vicky, curious, however you want to do it.
We would probably do a chart with a small narrative. So it'll be easy to incorporate, and we'll make sure it gets incorporated for the first quarter 2021 report.
Great. That's a great idea. Thank you.
Yeah, just a snap, script of where the budget is, you take a shot at it, and then it shows you in the actual. So, thank you. I don't have any questions. This was just a discussion item. If there's no questions, we'll move on to the next one. We got one more. We're doing really great. Last one is the budget survey. I think that's you, Laurel, so take it away.
Thank you, Council Member. At your last meeting, as you were going through the work plan, Council Member Delestrinas Johnson suggested, and the committee agreed, a little further discussion on the online budget survey that we did last year and how it informed the budget. So I thought this would be an appropriate meeting to get that conversation going. So I'm not going to read the memo in your packet, but I'll just touch on some high notes, which is that last year was very unusual for a variety of reasons, both in staff capacity and budget realities and limitations of public outreach, meaning everything had to be done virtually. The survey was an effort by a cross-departmental team, and it had a couple of touches with the Finance Committee in the summer. We kind of went back to the drawing board with some Finance Committee input to the first draft. So the final survey that was published was basically a list of the programs identified in priority-based budgeting without the ones that are legally mandated or self-sustaining or internal service, kind of stripped that stuff away. And then the list of programs appeared. People were asked to weigh in on what they thought were still priorities for the city, and they weren't limited to a certain number. The same list of programs was provided, and people were asked what they thought could be a potential for reduction or elimination. And again, there was no, it wasn't a pick your five or anything. It was pretty free form. And then we had some open-ended questions asking them some other things about what was important to them, what they thought the city should focus on. So the survey was up for about a month, and we had really amazing response. I think that the council probably helped with that as far as getting the word out and encouraging people to take it, so thank you. Once the survey closed, we provided a report of responses to the council, and it was a fairly comprehensive report. I believe it listed every single answer to the open-ended questions. Survey was distributed, and the priorities that emerged from the ranking exercise were community policing, equity, fire department outreach, human services, park maintenance, police body cams, school district partnerships, street maintenance, and teen and youth programming. So the council, as council and as you deliberated the proposed budget, you were able to factor those priorities into your conversations and deliberation. It was one tool. There were other outreach efforts, such as a couple of listening sessions, and then, of course, you have public hearings and public comment at council meetings. So going forward, I liked the survey personally. I thought it was pretty effective, and I would like to build upon it next time and improve it to the degree that we can. One thing that Vicki and I discussed that we would like to do next time is to issue the survey earlier in the process. Again, last year was unusual. It got, into the fall as the budget was really going, had been announced by the mayor, and so we would really like to be able to incorporate the public feedback into the development of the budget. And so that is something that can be approved upon for next time. And then the other thing I want to mention is that with the new ERP, staff will be able to revisit the priorities, the priority-based budgeting priority programs, and make sure that they're the most effective reflection of what the city does. So that's my high-level summary. Vicki or David, please feel free to add something I've forgotten, and I will turn it back to the council for questions.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'll give an opportunity to Vicki and David before we go to the council members if there's any additional things you want to add.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for the opportunity. I just really want to stress that I really like the idea of the involvement from the public into the budget process. And as Laurel stated, we do have lessons learned from this process, and we want to be able to reach out to our communities much earlier in the process next year so that we can incorporate their responses into as we draft the budget. I like the survey. I think the survey got some really good results this last time, much better than prior surveys. But hopefully, knock on wood, we're out of the pandemic enough that we could do some in-person community engagement as well, because I really like to see that in-person feedback as well. So we'll see what we can do early next year would be my plan.
Okay. Thank you, Vicki. David?
I also like the video, the survey as well. I would like to expand on it. We've always been talking about doing a community survey, and due to language and access, so I think this is a good starting point for us to do a more regular community survey, not just waiting for the budget process. So Laurel did a great job of shepherding this through. So good job. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. So I'll go to Kathy, questions, comments, and then Cynthia.
No, it was yes to having this earlier in the process. And no, I don't really have any other questions, just some thoughts that we can talk about next time around. We
don't need to
do that right now. So,
okay.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Cynthia?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, my computer's it's going slow. I hear everybody fine, but the pictures are moving slow. I thought the survey was great. My only, what I feel like we could do better next time is exactly what you guys talked about in your lessons learned section. So I feel like we're all on the same page in terms of being able to do it earlier, and I understand why we didn't do it earlier. But I'm just really glad that we got it out, because I thought that it was very useful during the council deliberations on the budget, when we were trying to prioritize some of those additional services at the end. I definitely leaned on the survey and what the community really wanted to see. So I thought it was very helpful. And what I wished is that it was just done earlier, so that even prior to receiving the mayor's budget, the staff would have had that information ahead of time to incorporate it, so that it wasn't just council at the end, you know, making those end decisions. But in the end, I thought it really came in handy. So thank you so much, Laurel, as well as Vicki, David, all the staff who worked on that. And I look forward to seeing it done again for the next budget process.
Yeah, so I thought the council did a pretty good job getting the word out. And I also want to say that, the staff, you and Laurel, and Vicki and the rest have done an excellent job. And I look forward on some of the lessons learned and how do we implement the next time. Just a curiosity, one of the things, there is some elements that you listed on the memo that emerged. And I was wondering, if we had 288 folks responded, how do they rate each up against it? You know, did someone rate it? What is the level, hierarchy level of, that would be good to kind of get maybe next time also, to see how many people said they won this versus that, so just a thought around that. Go ahead, Cynthia. I'm just kind of wrapping up, but go ahead.
No, I like what you suggested, Zach, because I was thinking about, we're definitely still feeling the effects of COVID. And I think at our last meeting, we talked about wanting to be able to prioritize, where we might make cuts or where we may make increases if the budget is, if it's looking better than what we expected. And I think it would be helpful to have more, maybe like a one-pager analysis of the survey results in terms of like the list you gave, prioritizing this came in as the highest ranked, by the 288 people that responded, then this, then that. Because it's a way to hold us accountable to what the community, said they wanted.
Yep, totally agree on that. And that's, I think that's an aggregate that on the other end, especially from the staff that could produce, because, if so many people went in there, they they definitely, you can just definitely track on how many people said this versus other items. So I see your hand. Kathy, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I wanted to say something about, along with that survey, if we're looking at acting on responses, it would be good to also have a randomly generated survey so that we can get a representative sample of all the community, because in this case, the people that would answer would be people that were more probably used to using computers, and I'm thinking about how probably our senior population was probably completely left out of that, and some other hot populations, which when we don't have a pandemic, then we could just go to the senior center or something like that and get more input. But as far as like saying 10 people said this and 10 people said that, I'm more apt to be interested in that, those kind of type of statistics when you have a randomly generated, when you are taking your responses out, which is really hard to do, because then how do you do that? And people, you might get the same kind of responses. People that are good at responding on, that like questionnaires, will respond, but there's also survey fatigue that comes on if you start surveying people too much, which has been discussed in some of the committees I've been on before. So there's just a lot of things as far as taking the data and using it, there's a lot of things to discuss in that, which those were some of the things I was going to say that we can get into those details when we go back the next time that we are surveying people for the budget.
Okay. Laura, I see your hand. You got your hand raised.
Thank you. I just wanted to tag on to what Councilmember Hogarty brought up, which is I always want to caution council members about the surveys. They're not statistically, it's not a true statistical representation of the community for some of the reasons that she described, which is why I think it's really important you consider it to be one tool in your toolbox and you consider the results along with everything else, all the other different ways you hear from the community. Thanks.
I absolutely agree on that. And, you know, totally aware, I think one of the things we, city striving is to engage the communities that are hard to reach. And I think, you know, seniors are one of them and people that don't even have a computer. So figuring out how do we, you know, get some data, it's going to be very important next time around too. So I wasn't suggesting when I asked about the 288, if you look at prior budgets, some of them really got zero responses. And I believe, you know, we can get more than 288 than we've gotten for the last budget, for this budget, I should say. But also that data is very important too. So, okay. Thank you for your comments. Oh, go ahead, Laura.
When you're ready to conclude the meeting, I had one thing to follow up on from the first item.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I think that was the last item. Thank you. We did it in less than a half an hour. It was easy items, I think, I should say. But, you know, it's because of you guys. You know, we very efficient with our time, so thank you. I think that said, Laura, go ahead, please.
Thank you for the opportunity. I wanted to quickly revisit the first item, the city utility payments. I think that staff had expected to put this on the committee of the whole agenda on the 22nd and then the special consent that same night. But when the committee was doing its recommendation, I heard straight to consent. So I just wanted to clarify that. You always have the option to put something to consent and bypass COW regardless of what the agenda says. But if you could just clarify your intent there, that would be helpful.
I would definitely go with the consent. You know, if that's all right with, I see a head nod. So we'll go ahead and put in the special meeting under consent agenda.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yep. Okay. Is there any miscellaneous items before we adjourn? Cool. All right. Seeing none, closing the meeting. That's all right with y'all. Laura, can you stay a bit? I'd like to catch up with you. Thank you, everybody.
See you guys later.
Thank you.